Well, Merry Christmas. There's no war on Christmas. There's an acceptance of Christmas and its universality. And there are good reasons why it's universal. And there are some pretty strange reasons why there has been resistance. Not simply, people always assume that any resistance to Christmas is from the secular world, where most of the time, historically, it's been from some other orthodoxy that is terribly afraid that someone's having a good time and a party, and that Christmas has been overtaken by paganism, which it has, and that's a good thing, but I'll get to that. People look at the Christmas story and go, oh, these miracles about Christmas. How can we celebrate Christmas? Do we have to believe in virgins giving birth and stars moving across the sky? Do we have to believe in three magi, or what my stepfather used to call the three wise guys, coming from the east? Do we have to believe in all of the various stories to celebrate Christmas? I mean, there are those miracles, and miracles are just uncomfortable for rational and reasonable people. The great miracle is not about kings and virgins and shepherds and angels singing in heavenly harmony. The great miracle of Christmas is conception, is birth, is love being made flesh in a child. The celebration, we argue about the little stories and the miracle of life, of consciousness, is right before us in evidence, experience in every day and in every moment, but not always noticed. And what Christmas can do is make us pay attention to the real miracle, to the real blessing of this moment, of this life, of this time that we have together, and not argue about the wise guys and the virgins. Those are poetry. If we, with our reasonable minds, have to pick between fact and truth, we will have sterile lives. There are facts. There is history, and history is very interesting. I study it. I want to know what happened historically, but it's different from the truths of Christmas. I don't know what happened 2,000 years ago in the year somewhere 5 and 7 before himself. I don't know all of the conditions. I'm interested, but I don't need to know them in order to understand, experience, and appreciate the truths. Every year, and I get criticized harshly for this, I make it a point to watch It's a Wonderful Life. Okay, I'll come to Ann's house and watch it, because I love that movie. And you know something? You don't have to believe in Clarence the Angel Without Wings in order to get It's a Wonderful Life. It doesn't depend on the fables and the poetry. It depends on the insight that what we do makes a difference in this world, and that's the lesson as he stands on the bridge ready to end his life. He's standing there, and the angel says to him, but just a second, don't throw it away. Look at the people who you've touched, as Anne talked about in her experience in Portland. We don't know and cannot know all the people whose lives we have touched. It doesn't depend on having a focus group up in the sky about Clarence and his wings. It depends on us having open hearts to the poetry of religion. Once upon a time, I was at an Opera Guild luncheon, and Vincent Price, whom you may not know, was a great opera buff, quoted somebody, and I don't know who it was, but the quote was this: that when poetry wanders too far from the song, it ceases to be poetry. And when the song wanders too far from the dance, it ceases to be music. I think that when religion wanders too far from nature, it ceases to be religious, and it becomes doctrine and dogma. There are people who want to get all the paganism out of Christmas. It's like peeling an onion, looking for its center. Once you've gotten to the center, you're without anything in your hands, and the onion is in the sink. When we peel away the poetry of religion, and of Christmas specifically, what are we left with? The date of Christmas is not biblical. December 25th was the birthday of Mithra. It's Mithra Mass for you Zoroastrians in the crowd. It's the Saturnalia for those Romans in the crowd. We peel away the paganism, and there goes the Christmas tree, the evergreen. There goes the mistletoe. There goes the Yule log. There go the flying reindeer. That wasn't an invention of Johnny Marks with Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. The flying reindeer came from Christine Garner's people long, long ago. What they were drinking when those reindeer took off, I can't tell you, but aquavit would be my guess. Those are all the poetry and fancy of religion that illustrate wonder and joy and light and life. You know, one of the reasons that, Chris, aside from that great definition of Puritanism, which is the fear that somewhere someone's having a good time, that Christmas gets, you know, put down because it's too raucous, it's too pagan, it's too joyous, there's also the part that is theologically uncomfortable, which is, but it, to me it's the heart, it's the soul of Christmas. It is the idea that God can become a baby, and a baby that is naked and vulnerable, and that it takes human beings to keep the divine alive. And Christmas is to see the divine in every baby, in every child. Every child is potentially a wonder child, is potentially something that draws us to future life, that draws us to do something to nourish, to sustain, to honor the future by what we choose and what we do today. The paganism of light and of dark, we're tied to the seasons. Our religions have not, in the Northern Hemisphere, wandered too far away from that calendar of the solstice, of what emotionally the dark and encroaching days do to us, and that joyous noise, that bonfire that we light with song, with logs, with laughter, with adult spirits, to give us a foreshadowing of the spring and of the light and of the life. There's a reason that the sun was worshipped and that we look to the skies and to the stars as the source of life, as the source of light, and feared it going out, feared that someday the sun would sink so low, the days would close in so far and might not come back. So we sang songs of hope. And when the sun began to rise again, we had a party. We had a party in different ways, but with similarities in all of our religious traditions. A welcome of the spring in the heart of the winter. What a courageous thing to do. That's the act of faith. The act of faith based on observation, based on science, not something separate, is that the sun also rises and light and life come back. What do we do as Unitarians and Universalists? Well, one thing we did is we sang a hymn this morning. What was the first hymn we sang? Came Upon a Midnight Clear. Would you believe that was written by a Unitarian minister? Reverend Sears in the 19th century. Unitarian ministers wrote hymns. Wow. Let's try this. Name your favorite Christmas song. Anybody? Schubert Ave Maria. Schubert Ave Maria. I'm another schmaltzy guy. I'm with you. There are Bach Gounod people. I know you're more sophisticated. What else?
Silent Night.
Jingle Bells. Good. Anybody else?
White Christmas.
White Christmas. First Noel.
Noel, you know,
mm-hmm. Deck the Halls. Little Town of Bethlehem was written by a Unitarian minister. Yes. Well, mine, I'll tell you mine, I'm a little surprised not to have heard it, but maybe you're just afraid to say it in here, is O Holy Night. O Holy Night. What an incredible melody written by a French political radical. O Holy Night, Cantique Noël, written by an assimilated French Jew. O Holy Night. English lyrics by the Reverend John Sullivan Dwight, a Unitarian minister. It came upon a midnight clear, and O Holy Night, do they have in common, beside the Unitarian connection, talking about peace, talking about justice, talking about feeding the hungry, and talking about freedom. Everybody knows the first verse of O Holy Night, but the third verse is instructive. I won't sing it. This is the applause exception for our... Truly he taught us to love one another. His law is love and his gospel is peace. Chains shall he break, for the slave is our brother, and in his name all oppression shall cease. Sweet hymns of joy and grateful chorus raise we, let all within us praise his glorious name. And then, as you know, the song says, fall on your knees, hear the angel voices, come to the creche, come to the cradle, come to new life and fall on your knees in front of the miracle that is life. The miracle and the hope that is incarnate in every new child. And then get up off of your knees and do something to feed the hungry, to protect the innocent, to guard the vulnerable. And that's how we celebrate Christmas. We celebrate Christmas with those gifts of our talents and our passions and our treasure to make a better tomorrow for our children by being present to them in every way at this season. It is a reminder at the deepest level of how to be human. We also celebrate Christmases as a time of nostalgia, our Christmas experiences that we had as children. We celebrate Christmas future, the Christmases that we look forward to with family, with grandparents, as grandparents with our children and grandchildren. We also celebrate Christmases we may never have had and have implanted memories and nostalgia. Most of our Christmas ideas are Dickensian. We celebrate, yes, a certain amount of Norse mythology, but also Dickens' description of what Christmas was like. And so, out of a sense of nostalgia for a Christmas that I've only experienced twice, some of you have experienced often, let's close this service as we take up our collection, our plate that we are sharing this week. Stand if you are willing and able, and you all know the words to the Christmas that we have some experienced, and that is, Brad?